Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the National All Employment Network call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You may also use the chat feature. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press *0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, February 5th, 2015. I would now like to turn the conference over to Michelle Lejeune, EN Development and Training Manager. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everyone to our February National Employment Network's call. We appreciate your time and dialing in this afternoon. We have an exciting agenda. We have speakers to share with us an update on the Department of Labor's Disabled Veterans Outreach Program. However, before we get to that, we have some announcements we would like to share with you from the Social Security Administration. We first have Kara Kaplan, who will provide an update on ENSB announcements, Mark Green on the beneficiary CD, and LaWanda Hawkins on APOR. So I'm going to turn it over at this time to Kara Kaplan.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to remind everybody that the ticket portal, the SSA ticket portal, will be going live the end of March. So each person, each EN, is required to submit the following information for each employee that will be using the portal. We need each person's Roam user ID, their user ID, you probably know it as better, their SSN, and their security awareness training letter. You can call your ENSB specialist and give them that information, or you can fax it in as well. Also, we do need at least every 90 days from each EN verification that the employees that you have registered in the ticket portal are still working for you. Your EN will be shut out if we don't have that verification every 90 days, and that's just a security thing on our end. Suitability. We have many ENs that still do not have at least one employee on their staff with suitability clearance. In the next couple of weeks, those ENs will all be put on a hard hold for ticket assignments and payments. We cannot allow people to be conducting business without suitability clearance. It's a requirement under your BPA. Also, when you are sending in a request, an inquiry, anything to the mailbox or to your ENSB service specialist, we'd appreciate that in the subject line, if you could put your DUNS number and your E number, which is also known as your contract number. And that is it.
Thank you, Kara. Mark Green?
Thank you, Michelle. Hi, everyone. I'm going to just briefly discuss the beneficiary outreach CD. Those of you who receive it know we sent the revised version the first time out the end of January. I'm repeating my request for comments. I'd like you to send them directly to me, Mark, mark.green, like the color, at ssa.gov. Some of you already sent comments, and Susan Webb, if you're out there, we have those. But rather than discussing them as they come in, I want to gather a greater body of information, and I think we're going to have schedule an entire all-in call as a listening session. We haven't had one of those in a while on the beneficiary CD, which will address all the questions we get. So Mark Green, Mark with a K, green like the color, please send me all the comments you have on the beneficiary CD and look for the announcement of a listening session on that, and we'll go over it in great depth. Thank you very much. Michelle.
Thank you, Mark. And now I'll turn it over to LaWanda Hawkins, who's going to give us an update on the APOR, which was released last week. And we have a few updates. LaWanda.
Thank you, Michelle. Don't know if this will classify as updates, but I just want to make sure that all ENs know that the annual performance outcome report was launched on January 28th and that all active ENs are required to provide responses to the APOR. We want you to visit the Information Center on the Ticket to Work website for resources to assist you in meeting your reporting requirements. On the Ticket to Work webpage this year, you will find links to the recorded webinar that we held on January 28th, frequently asked questions, and terms and definitions. This year, we have also posted the APOR questions on the webpage to allow ENs the opportunity to review the questions and prepare draft responses prior to entering the SurveyMonkey. The deadline for submitting your APOR responses is Friday, February 27th, 2015. So as of today, you have 21 days to submit your APOR responses if you have not already done so. I cannot stress enough the importance of submitting your responses in a timely manner. Failure to do so may result in SSA limiting your agency's ability to assign tickets and receive payments. So it depends on how important that is to you. If you have any questions regarding the APOR, once you've reviewed the questions and all the resources we posted for you, please send your inquiries to SSAEN@yourtickettowork.com, and we will get back to you within 24 hours and answer your questions. So that is all.
Good. Thank you very much. And we are sending those helpful reminders out each week.
Yes.
Just as a reminder, plug, please get your APOR into the office. Thank you. All right. We are now going to move to our presentation by the Department of Labor. And
excuse me, Michelle. I'm sorry. It's Mark Green. I wonder if we should just pause and ask if anybody has some brief questions on the first part of the presentation.
Sure. Operator, can we open our line for any calls or questions? And do we have any questions on the chat line that we can speak to right now? There are no questions? We're going to check very quickly here. Let's see.
Have been answered.
So we've answered most.
Ladies and gentlemen, to register for an audio question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. And we do have audio questions. Our first question from the line of Susan Webb. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. You know, you mentioned on, Kara, you mentioned a security awareness training letter. I'm not familiar with that. I don't know. All of my staff has gone through the security awareness training. I'm wondering now, though, if we're doing something wrong, if we haven't gotten any of that. I've never seen one. Is that something new?
Yeah, it's the form that the people check out and you sign. That, yes, security awareness. We just need that uploaded in everybody's file, and that's on a yearly basis. It's a requirement.
Okay. Okay. All right. I didn't know what it was. Thank you for the clarification. That's it for me.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another call in?
We do. Our next question from the line of Kimberly Carnley. Please go ahead.
Hi, Kimberly. How can we help you? You may be on mute. Want to unmute your phone?
Okay, sorry about that. How you doing?
That's okay. What's your question? Thank you for calling in.
I don't have any employees, so the letter, the suitability letter, how am I supposed to handle that? Do you already have that information in your system? Because when I hear the word hard hold on payments, I get nervous. So I got to get it clear here right now.
So you're saying you're a one-person operation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you have suitability clearance?
I have to have had it. How can I prove that I don't?
If you you want to prove that you do, if you shoot me an email and let me know what your EN name is,
mm-hmm.
I can check for you, and I'll let you know if you do or do not have it.
What's your name?
Kara, C-A-R-A, dot mm-hmm. Kaplan, C-A-P-L-A-N, at SSA.gov.
Okay. All right, thank you. I'll do that now.
Operator, do we have another question?
We do. Our next question from the line of Julie Johnson. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hey.
Mike. My question is, I didn't get this down fast enough. So when you were talking about the SSA Ticket to Work portal, the portal, what did you say we needed to have to be, you know, eligible for that to make sure we're ready? Did you say user ID, Social Security number, our security awareness letter? What was that again? Could you just repeat that again quickly?
No problem. It's your user ID, your Social Security number, the security awareness training letter, and we can check for your suitability.
Okay.
Those are the
four
requirements.
And the user ID, what is that?
You register for mysSA.gov with extra security, you get a PIN in the mail.
Okay.
And with that PIN is how you sign up for your account, and you get a user ID, and you establish your password at that time. That user ID is what we need.
Okay, and so we can, so we call our representative with that information.
Correct.
Is that what you were saying? Okay, got it. Thank you.
No problem.
And our next question comes from the line of Judy Sanderson. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, or at least it is where I am. Susan got an answer to the most of my question because I had the same thing about the training letter. We have done the letter. We've had all the staff have signed off, and I have submitted those letters. The last time that we updated them, they were all sent in. Do I need to send them in again?
If you send them in, you should be good to go.
Okay, so we're all set.
But if you send your, if I were you, you should send your service person an email to double check for you.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. All righty. All right, thank you. That was it.
Our next question from the line of Paul Luttrell. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm following up on what Susan asked and Judy just asked us. When you say security awareness training letter, you're talking about the security awareness contractor personnel security certification, right?
Yes.
SSA Form 222.
Correct.
Yeah. And for those who don't know it, that was updated in September. So if you've completed one, you know, last year, which you should have, and one this year, it's a different form. So just was making everybody aware of that. And that might not be aware of it. And do we send our this year's forms to Kara or to somebody else?
Yeah, don't send them to me. You can send them to the EN service mailbox, or you can send them to your EN specialist. So that would be EN service at SSA.gov or whomever your EN specialist is.
Okay. Very good. That's it.
We're going to take two more questions and then turn it over to our move forward with our presentation. Operator, do we have another question?
We do. Our next question comes from the line of Misty Sanborn. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'm sorry. I think my questions have all been answered. They were basically what Paul and Susan were asking, except what I didn't catch was the EM specialist, is that our account manager?
It's
or
your account.
Is there someone else?
It's your SSA, ENSB specialist. It's an SSA person.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
No problem.
And we have no further questions at this time.
Thank you. And again, if we have those who are on the call, please know that we will answer your questions in our chat line, and we will open up the lines for additional questions after our presentation this afternoon. So at this time, I am very pleased to introduce the presenters for today's overview of the Department of Labor's Disabled Veterans Employment and Training Program. They will also speak to the Disabled Veterans Outreach Program. First, we have three speakers this afternoon, and the first speaker is Timothy Green, and he is the director of the DOL Office of Strategic Outreach for Veterans Employment and Training Service. Our second speaker is Melanie McGill, and she is a senior quality assurance analyst for the Career Source Broward in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and the lead for its CareerSource Broward American Job Center Employment Network. She will be joined by George Ivanhoff, who is the Wagner Pazer Program Manager at the CareerSource Broward in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You will get to hear more about each one of them and what they do and their role and function under the Department of Labor Veterans Outreach Program. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Tim Green. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that introduction. My name is Tim Green. I work at the Department of Labor, and I'm a 28-year Air Force veteran. And I started here almost 2 years ago working for labor. And I do outreach to our stakeholders. I do legislative affairs, do public affairs work, and I also do run an advisory committee. So we've got quite a full plate. We're a small organization, about 236 personnel, but we're in all 50 states, and I'll explain a little bit about that. But before I get into the Disabled Veteran Outreach Program itself, I'm going to just give you a little overview of VETS. So if you could turn to the next slide, please. So we're the Veterans Employment and Training Service, and we call ourselves VETS. So our mission, we have three primary missions, and we've picked up a fourth. So we prepare separating service members for the transition. So we do this through, we teach a three-day TAP employment workshop. And just recently, we added a lot of disability information into that. So we can, you know, as a transitioning service member goes through TAP, we call it, Transition Assistance Program, they take a three-day employment workshop. We teach them how to write resumes. We teach them how to do job searches. We also provide them information on some of their rights and some of their, you know, things that their programs that they're eligible to draw from. And some of those are disability related. As you know, there's many veterans that come out with some form of a disability, and we want to make sure that they know of all the programs that are out to help them. We also provide for our veterans, and we do that primarily through what I'm going to mostly talk about. It's called the Jobs for Veterans State Grant, which funds the DVOPs, which are out in the American Job Centers. And I'll explain all this in a minute. And then the LVERs, the local veteran employment representatives who work with employers. We also, one of our mission areas is we protect the rights of men and women who serve through the USERRA. If you're familiar with that, the Uniform Services Reemployment Rights Act. So if you're a service member that gets called up for Guard and Reserve duty and you come back after that tour, you should have your job waiting as if you hadn't left the job. And then finally, we promote the hiring of veterans with employers. So you can go to the next slide, please. This is just a quick chart of how we think about the transition process. So we have a active duty service member person up in the upper left. They go through the transition assistance program about 90 days prior to transition. Then they become after they get out, they become a veteran. And most veterans, they either become a student, they could start their own business, or they become they want to get a job. And that's where most veterans fall in. They want to get a job. And the way we help veterans get a job that are struggling to find work is through the American Job Centers. Next slide, please. So within, this is a picture of the United States. Within the United States, there's roughly 2,500 job centers, and this shows all the breakout of all the states. Within the American Job Center Network, that is where all Americans can go for service, but the veterans get priority of service there. And at these job centers, this is where the DVOPs, the Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialists, and the leavers, they work out of these offices here. So next slide, please. Okay, so this slide talks about within the Department of Labor, our organization is focused on veterans, but the Employment and Training Administration on the right-hand side top up there in the pink, they run the employment and training agency administration, and they run all the job centers, all the rest of the staff. So let's say a veteran walks into one of these job centers, they're going to get seen by somebody. If they have some kind of barrier to employment, they'll get seen by, through our program, and we'll talk about that a little bit in a second here. So you can go to the next slide. Okay. So within all 50 states, I said there's about 2,500 job centers. They're in almost every area of the country. And within that job center, that's where all Americans come to get help with employment. What we do is we fund the Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialist through our office, through the Jobs for Veterans State Grant. So a disabled, we can go to the next slide. Okay, but within the job center, before I get into that, I forgot, we have a lot of partners within there. So if you're not familiar with the job center network, every state has these employment, and they're often named a little bit differently, but they're part of the American Job Center Network. So in Virginia, it might be the Veteran Employment Commission or Veteran Employment Office. You know, so every state might have a little bit different name, but they're all under the American Job Center. And if you want to make that connection with that job center, all you have to do is go to servicelocator.org, the website. You put in your zip code, and it'll come right up, the nearest one to you. But there's a lot of partners with this job center, the SNAP program, training programs, unemployment insurance. Voc Rehab is often co-located with our job center network. And so there's a lot of activity for those that are struggling to find employment where they can get help, because often when they come into the job center, a veteran comes in, they need more than just help with a resume. They might have some other issues that they're bringing with. And we have partnered within these job centers, so it's kind of a one-stop shop for everybody to go into. Next slide. So here's the heart of the program. We have the Jobs for Veterans State Grant Program, which funds the Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialist. And they provide intensive services to veterans that have a significant barrier to employment. Some of those barriers can be disabilities, homelessness, recently separated and unemployed, incarcerated, lack of a high school diploma, low income. And by statute, those veterans that come in, they come into the job center, they get priority service, and the Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialist, the DVOP, there's a screening process when they come in the door. So if they have a barrier for employment, they're going to go to the DVOP and get intensive services. That's where they're going to really work on any kind of issue that they need to make them employment ready. And then the other position we fund within the job center is the local veteran employment representative. And they're the ones that do outreach to employers trying to create those job opportunities for veterans. Currently, we have about 1,500 DVOPs and about 730 leavers in our system working at these job centers throughout the country. A lot of them are focused in veteran high areas where there's a lot of veterans in that area. We'll have more DVOPs and leavers. So you can go next slide, please. So when we say intensive services, this is kind of how we break that out in the middle column there. So they're going to assess their needs of the veteran that comes in. They're going to help them with an individual development plan. They're going to provide employment counseling, career planning. They're going to hook them up with training opportunities that they're eligible for to make them employment ready. If they have type of disabilities, they're going to work on helping them with employment, finding jobs, and accommodations if necessary. And so they provide all these intensive services. And if they need training services, then they will refer them over probably to the other side that our Employment Training Administration runs to get some additional training. And there's often training opportunities and dollars within the job center network where we can get extra training opportunities. So if you're out there and you're working with a disabled veteran and he needs some training opportunities, I highly suggest that you connect with your job center and you explore what kind of opportunities there are available, because all these services are free, you know, run by the federal government. And again, veterans, if they're a veteran, they do get priority service for training as well as these intensive services. And as you can see at the bottom, we do, within the big network, we serve about 17 million participants a year and about 1.2 million veterans. And then in the last program year, we helped about 450,000 veterans actually find a job within 90 days of signing up for our services. So you can go to the next slide, please. That was my bell. I'm just running out of time here, but the we also have the other position, the Lever, which, like I said before, they do outreach to businesses, and they help them, they help create job opportunities. So they work very closely within the job center with the DBOP and the rest of the staff to make sure that, you know, employers are considering the veteran for those positions that they want to hire. Next slide. This just talks about some of the categories that I covered earlier on the SBE. So if you're wondering, you know, what kind of veterans can get seen, these are some of the categories here. But really, you don't have to, if you have a customer or you're a veteran that's going to a job center, you're talking there, you don't really have to know this. You just send them there, and then they'll get help at the job center, whether it's through our program or not. Next slide. And this is some of the other duties that a DVOP, Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialist, does. They do case management. They coordinate business activity. But they're really, their primary job is these intensive services to the veterans to help them get ready for employment. Next slide, please. And this is really the only thing you have to take away from this whole thing, is that the American Job Center Network, they're in your neighborhoods, they're throughout the country. If you want to find one, you go on to this servicelocator.org, you put in your zip code, and the nearest one will come up. You give them a call, you stop in, and they'll help you or your customer. And remember, there's free training services within there, there's employment services in there, and the staff is very professional. At every job center I've been to, the staff is very professional, willing to help and work with you. So this is a good partnership to make if you're working in the veteran space or with any disabled veteran or American. They're there to help. So next slide. Okay, so that's my pitch. Use the job center, servicelocator.org, and the veteran will get taken care of. So I'm going to turn it over now to the folks that really know the detail on this. Melanie, I believe?
Yep. Good afternoon, everybody. Next slide. So one of the things I'm going to talk about is really the coordination that happens between the veterans and the employment network. I have staff in the centers who are disability program success coaches that work strictly with people that are in the Ticket to Work program. So CareerSource Broward is one of 24 workforce boards in the state of Florida. We're a one-region board. Our DEI staff and veteran staff are co-located in our job centers. So they work very closely. There's three job centers. We have one in the north, central, and south part of our county. When staff are hired in our job centers, they go through a new hire orientation to make them aware of all the services that we provide. So what happens is if my staff, my DEI staff, we run under the Disability Employment Initiative. Florida is one of the states that has that grant through the Department of Labor. And my staff will meet with potential customers with disabilities to see if we can, if their ticket's eligible, and we will assign the ticket to our employment network. If then they will complete an individual work plan and then assign the ticket. If the staff determines that the customer is a veteran, then the DEI staff will complete the veteran's initial intake assessment form that George Ivanoff, who's going to be speaking next, created for the program. So my staff will not only do the intake, they'll do the individual work plan, but they'll also, if they realize they're a veteran, then they'll do the veteran assessment form. After completing the assessments, the staff will then, and they determine that the veteran has a significant barrier to employment, they will then schedule an appointment with the DVOP and have a meeting together. So the staff will meet. It's almost like an IRT, an individual team, to look at what the customer's needs are and who will be doing what. So this way the customer has different staff that they can go to, who they feel more comfortable with, to do this integrated resource team. So we work very closely together in our centers to help our customers and our veterans. And they'll work to meet whatever their goals are. So if it's an employment goal and my staff has leads, then we'll send the leads to the customer. We'll inform the DVOP of what's going on, and they'll talk and have meetings throughout the customer's job search efforts. George?
Thank you, Melanie. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is George Ivanoff. I'm the Wagner-Peiser Program Manager here at CareerSource Broward. I oversee the operations, service provision, and program compliance for the WP-funded programs, including the Jobs for Veterans State Grant, which we're discussing today. I'd like to thank Tim for giving us such a great overview on the JVSG positions and the grant itself, and then Melanie for touching on how our veterans interact with the Ticket to Work program and how we communicate between Ticket to Work and our DVOP and LEVER programs. So the very first thing that I'm going to touch on is an overview on the VRNE program. The Department of Veterans Affairs runs the Vocational Rehab and Employment Program, also known as Chapter 31, and the program helps veterans who have a disability eligibility entitlement designation with certain benefits and services to aid them in getting employed again. So this integration between VRNE and then the American Job Centers and all the other partners in the community always reminds me of a quote from Thomas Paine, the great 18th century revolutionary. And Paine said, lead, follow, or get out of the way. And there's a good time to do any one of those three things. We found that the greatest detriment to service to veterans is duplication of services or having the veteran job seeker, the veteran customer, the one in training and treatment go through the same process over and over again. Due to that, it's very, very important to make sure that services between partners, between the job centers and the VA are integrated, so we're not stepping on each other's toes and doing the same thing over again. Part of that is also knowing what are we good at and what can the VA do better, what can another partner supplement our services with, and that the spirit of that type of service provision is even written in the MOU language between USDOL Vets, DVA, which is on the screen right now, and talks about working together to maximize services and reducing duplication and fragmentation or delay in services provided. Next slide, please. So that's a big, complicated flowchart of how a veteran goes through the system to gain VRNE eligibility and then receive treatment and gain employment. You could look at that at your leisure. It's a basic representation. To be honest with you, the eligibility and entitlement requirements can get a little complex, so I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of that, but I will give you a resource where you can find out more about that information at your leisure. And it's very situation-specific to the veteran as well. Next slide, please. So essentially the process between the career centers and the VA will vary from even region to region, but also from state to state. But essentially it's a partnership to help find veterans that would be eligible and entitled to the VRNE program, refer them to the VA, and then assist the VA with getting the veteran through the VRNE process, and then stepping back and letting VRNE do what they do. Because there are benefits and there are services that the VA can provide that are just not available to us at the career centers, namely a lot of the supportive services. So things like monthly cash benefit subsistence allowance, medical expenses, you know, things even like dental and eyeglasses, things that we don't have the funding to provide at the career source level, VRNE can do that for veterans who have eligibility and entitlement, who meet the eligibility and entitlement requirements. So what we do here locally with our VA is we help refer veterans who may not know about the VRNE program or haven't been through it. We refer them over, help them with their eligibility and entitlement requirements, get them registered, let the VRNE do what they do best, and then on the back end, or if necessary during the process, that's where we step in and we help. All veterans who complete the VRNE program, who graduate, have to enter case management. It's a requirement of our grant. When they're referred to us, we're required to contact them and enroll them in intensive services and do our best to get them a job. And then after they get a job, we have to follow up with them for a minimum of 60 days. Sometimes we'll follow up with them longer than that. It's very case-specific, but for a minimum of 60 days. So we identify and enroll. We coordinate efforts. Next slide, please. We work with VRNE to do our best to find the individuals a job. We do this by leveraging the local veteran employment representative position. This is an individual, as Tim said, who goes out into the community, develops relationships with employers. We'll have a portfolio of veteran profiles generalized. For example, if we look into our system and see that we have 30% of the veterans in our system currently require a certain kind of job, and we don't have that kind of job available, we'll focus the lever, the LVER, to go out and find that kind of job. So we leverage those programs against each other. And then we share information. When a veteran gets referred from VRNE to the American Job Center, to a career source, the file comes with them, and we utilize that information so that we can shorten the cycle, shorten the assessment process, and make the veteran's life easier. Next slide, please. Post-employment follow-up, as I mentioned, is a minimum of 60 days, but again, it's very case-specific. There may be a case where a veteran requires a little bit more hands-on assistance to get fully integrated into that environment, into that job environment, so we do whatever we can to support veterans when they do get a job and if they need help getting into the cultural environment of their employer. So we stay in contact with them. When we know they're secure, then we just let them know we're here for them, and then we move on to the next one to help them out. So that's pretty much it. That's a brief overview. Happy to answer some questions if we have some time. Again, Melanie McGill oversees the Tickets Work Program. I'm with Wagner Peiser. And I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you, all of our speakers. Wow, this is very informative. We definitely have the PowerPoint posted on our calendar of events. So those of you that would like to make contact with any of our speakers, please, their information is available to you in the PowerPoint posted on the calendar events on the Ticket to Work website. Again, we have developed a resource section on our Ticket to Work website specializing on veterans resources, veterans disabled resources that we're making available to you, employment networks, and encourage you to make contact, as our speakers have spoken to, the Disabled Veterans Outreach Programs. Those specialists are there in the local areas to work with you for successful placements with veterans that are also disabled and eligible for SSI and SSDI. During the March All-EN call, you will be learning more about the Veterans Administration Vocational Rehabilitation and Employment Program. So this is not the only presentation that we're going to be making available to you. We have a follow-up presentation in March on this topic. Operator, do we have any questions from our participants for our speakers?
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone.
And again, as we wait for those questions to come through, I would like to extend a special thank you to Tim and Melanie and George for all of your participation today. Thank you for a job well done on explaining that. So you may be hearing from us again. Operator, do we have any questions?
We do. Our next question comes from the line of John Ayers. Please go ahead.
Yes, my name is John Ayers, and I'm in Louisville, Kentucky. And my question is related to supportive services for veterans that are not recently coming out of service. Let me give you a quick example. I know we're pressed for time, but my quick example is veteran has come out of service 10 years ago, has physical barriers, mental barriers, and now is attempting to reengage with either ticket to work or some veterans assistance. The concern I have is timeliness, because a lot of times the process to approve, how can we work better as partners to assist veterans so that they don't have the problem of going multiple agencies, repetitive processes. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. And I'm going to open it to the speakers. Who would like to go first on that?
I can take that question. This is George Ivanoff. John, that you pose a great question about making the process easier for veterans to get through. You specifically cited a veteran who is not recently released. While being recently released within 36 months of discharge is part of one of the barriers to employment that will get you seen by a DVOP, it's not the only one. So if there are other significant barriers to employment which will make a veteran eligible for services from a Disabled Veterans Outreach Program representative. Now, as far as the individual sort of red tape, for lack of a better term, to get services from different partner agencies, veteran service organizations, really the only thing that we can do in that situation is encourage those organizations to work closely together. And we try to do that, at least in our region, to where we communicate with our partners so that we align our intake requirements, so that if our partner cannot collect the information at the front end, at least they know what it is and can advise the veteran of what to be prepared for and set realistic expectations of what they need. So we try to inform and educate as best as possible and align those services as best as possible with our partners. I know that that's not the best answer and it's not an instant fix, but unless something happens and someone creates some sort of uniform document for all the agencies, that is going to be a challenge that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
And this is Tim Green from Labor. John, I would echo that completely. But the biggest thing is get the person into the American Job Center where they can be evaluated and look at some of the training opportunities and some of the other services within that local area that they're looking for employment. At least get that initial indoctrination, because normally when you make that connection, a lot of times there's a lot of success and there's a lot of synergy, and they know a lot about a lot of programs that you may be eligible for that you may not be aware of just by doing like an internet search.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another question for our speakers?
We do. Our next question is a follow-up question from the line of Susan Webb. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. My question is for George, but Melanie might want to weigh in as well. George, thank you so much for talking about the duplication and avoiding that. That is a huge problem, and you know it is because I can tell by the emphasis in your voice. Your audience, though, today is we are all employment networks out here in the communities, and we really are not an AJC ourselves, and yet we do need to interface with you guys, and yet what we need more is access to the training that is offered, and now you're kind of entering into a whole other place here now that veterans who are in the ticket program have another resource with which to get funding for training. But one of the things that we're finding and have found for years is that I'm told months ago that Wagner-Payser does require that people do jump through all those counseling and comprehensive services hoops before they get to that third column of access to training. There's tremendous opportunity in the new Work Innovation and Opportunity Act with the emphasis on training that's really relevant to job skills in the community and not requiring people to go through a lot of academic training when there are courses that they don't really need. So what do you see in the future of really integrating the ticket program? Because we already do all of those services, the comprehensive services in terms of career counseling, we're required to do it by our own program, the resume writing, all those kinds of things that we already do up front. But then to get the funding through the AJC, they got to go through a lot of that stuff again. And so you're talking about less duplication. Now, Melanie, of course, she's an EN, but she's in the AJC, so you're going to treat her as though she knows what she's doing. Whereas the others of us out here, how do we demonstrate to you that the services that we've already provided are of quality that is perhaps even more intense than what is provided by the AJC, so they can bypass those services to get to the training that they really need? Long question, I know.
Okay, I'll take that one. We're a workforce EN, so it works a little bit differently since we're all under the same roof. But if you have a customer that you're working with and you refer them to the AJC, or, you know, you have that soft referral, you maybe know who the ticket person is in that American Job Center, I would call that person and get a release from your customer. So they might not have to do some of the paperwork. But unfortunately, if you're going to go into training under the Workforce Investment Act, there's a lot of eligibility that has to be done that we have to do and prove ourselves, because we have to enter the information into our state database. So they may have to do an application for us and do the eligibility, but if you have all that documentation already, we may be able to use yours.
Okay. Well,
so
you know, that's
good. I think what the best thing that you can do is see who your contacts are in your job centers near you and work one-on-one and develop maybe some kind of formal process for the referrals.
Well, I think George kind of hit the nail on the head, or somebody did, when they said, well, you got to work with the folks there and kind of convince them. And, yeah, and I do that. I have the contacts, and I am doing that. And I am making some success with that, and I do think the WIOA allows for some wiggle room. What I'm really referring to is that somewhere we've got to have something written that really recognizes that those of us who are ENs are professional and that what we do is – qualified for the same kind of credit, if you will, as required by the Wagner-Payser. I agree with you that it's the local relationships, and I'm doing that. And in fact, during this call, ironically, I got an email from our very first successful person who just got through that process and got funding for some web developer training, which is wonderful. So I do think it's changing. But I do still hear, well, we got to go through all this because of Wagner-Payser. And I'm just curious from that perspective.
I don't know why it would be Wagner-Payser and not Workforce Investment Act, WIA.
Well,
but you know what? I don't know what state you're in, so it may work differently. Like for our customers, if they're going into WIA training, they might not have to go through Wagner-Payser because WIA will do all the work. So different states work differently.
Yeah,
like some
you're right.
States, I know, do enroll everybody into all the programs. So it would all depend on the state that you're in or the area that you're in and how they work.
Thank you for your follow-up. And I'm just going to ask the two of you to continue offline so we can move forward with our last presentation. And
remember,
we're going to have this conversation next month with on the same topic. So keep those questions in mind. And again, services to veterans with disabilities will be a topic of conversation for our March call as well. I'm going to move it now to a Section 503 update for Sally Rhodes.
Thank you, Michelle. Good afternoon, everyone. I'll try to be quick. I'm really just going to respond to a few questions we received regarding the revised regulations governing Section 503 of the Rehab Act. The first question was whether or not all federal contractors are required to have fully implemented use of the new self-identification or self-disclosure form by January the 15th. With regard to that new form, which is the one that federal contractors must share with all applicants and employees to voluntarily self-identify as an individual with a disability, the effective date is ultimately delayed until the start of the individual contractor's affirmative action plan cycle. For example, if a contractor's AAP cycle is March 1, 2015 to February 28, 2016, the effective date for full implementation would be March 1, 2015. For contractors with AAPs that took effect January the 1st, they should have implemented the self-identification form in January. I'd like to remind you that you can go to the Department of Labor's Office of Federal Contractor Compliance Programs website, OFCCP, for information on implementation deadlines and other information related to 503. And that website is http://www.dol.gov/OFCCP. The second question was also about the use of the self-identification form. Some ENs had hoped that completion of the form would give individuals with disabilities deference or preference in the hiring process. Some have asked how such deference would be given if the form is kept separate from the rest of the application. Actually, the purpose of collecting information on veterans and individuals with disability status is to attempt to measure the progress towards the hiring benchmarks for veterans required by the new regulations for the Vietnam-era Veterans Readjustment and Assistance Act, and the utilization goal for hiring and employing individuals with disabilities in the revised 503 regulations. The information disclosed on the self-identification form is to be kept confidential and may only be used in accordance with the regulations and provided to OFCCP upon request. As a result, your ticket holders may actually want to self-disclose as part of the interview process in an effort to gain some advantage in the hiring process if that contractor is really looking to hire people with disabilities. An overall key point to remember is that Section 503 regulations are not mandating that individuals with disabilities and or veterans receive deference in the hiring process. Instead, it really is an effort to ensure that they get fair consideration in the application and hiring process. This will mean different things to different contractors. In some cases, a contractor will be focusing on addressing the pipeline of candidates if that contractor is not doing an effective job in marketing their job opportunities to veterans and individuals with disabilities. In another case, the contractor will need to address why individuals with disabilities and veterans stay with their agency shorter periods of time than their non-disabled employees, and they may be looking at why they are not being promoted at comparable rates. If you want to learn more about the self-identification form and self-disclosure in the hiring process, these topics were discussed in detail during the Section 503 Community of Practice sessions that the AWESOME hosted in April 2nd and July 9th last year. The archives of these COP sessions are available on the Ticket to Work website. Go to the Information Center, click on the Events Archive in the left navigation, and then click on 503 Community of Practice. The final question was about the viability of developing relationships with the large number of federal contractors found in most geographic areas. And given the incredible number of federal contractors, it really is not feasible for any EN to establish individual relationships with all of the federal contractors in its geographic area. That is why we have been recommending that ENs do some initial research prior to reaching out to any federal contractors in the area. Start by narrowing your list down to those employers with large federal contracts that are likely to result in multiple job opportunities. Then you want to conduct a web search on those few selected contractors to determine if they are likely to have positions that would be a good fit for the beneficiary your EIN serves. Once you have narrowed your list down, you can start reaching out to a few selected contractors to develop relationships. And, of course, another option is to partner with referral resources that are already working with federal contractors in your geographic area. For example, the American Job Centers or your state VR agency. Regardless of what approach you take, as you all know, it is critically important to screen candidates carefully before referring them for job openings. If you're mindful of referring candidates that are qualified to fill the positions that they're applying for, the contractor is likely to view your EIN as a good source of qualified candidates in the future. Again, you can learn more about identifying federal contractors by accessing AWSM's November 2013 training titled Section 503 Creates New Opportunities for Ticket Holders. This is on the Ticket to Work website. Again, go to the Information Center, click on Events Archives in the left navigation, and look for the 503 Readiness Training. I also want to encourage every EIN that applied to be listed on the Employer Resource Referral Directory, or the ERRD, to go back and check your listing. I've heard from one person that his EIN was listed a couple of months ago, and it's no longer there. The listing is no longer there. And before AWSM raises this issue with OSCCP, we want to know if other EINs are running into the same problem. If your EIN was listed at one time and you look and it's not there any longer, please email me and let me know the details. My email is Sally, S-A-L-L-I-E, Rhodes, R-H-O-D-E-S, at maximus.com. And if you do that within the next week or so, then we'll determine whether we need to contact OSCCP and see if we can do something about that. And while you're at it, I'd suggest you also check your EIN's listing in the Employment Network Directory, listed on the Choose Work website. As we know, all EINs have changes at different times, address, phone number, contact name, etc. So it's always advisable to check your EIN directory listing periodically to ensure the accuracy of the information. And you can access the EIN directory by visiting the Choose Work website, www.choosework.ttw.net, and looking for the Find Help icon. That's it for me for today. Thanks, Michelle.
Oh, thank you, Sally, and thank you for those updates. And just as a reminder, we are still accepting effective practice papers through the end of February. So please consider submitting and participating on one of our national calls as a presenter. That concludes our call today. We will take, I know it's five after, we'd like to take maybe three questions, and we will definitely get back to all of you that have submitted questions on the chat line. Operator, you want to open our line, and we'll take three questions before we adjourn the call today.
Certainly. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone.
Do we have a caller, operator?
I'm showing we have no questions registered at this time.
Thank you again for the presentation from the Department of Labor, our speakers. Thank you so much for sharing with us the process, helpful hints, and how we can reduce duplication across the board. I think the bottom line is communication and coordination, and that was explained very well today. So, again, thank you to our speakers, and thank you for all of those who dialed in today. And also, Social Security Administration, thank you for your updates and being there for us. Have a wonderful day and happy Valentine's Day. That concludes our call.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.